Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. This week, we've done shows about the politics behind California's water system, agriculture, and the $110 billion bottled water industry. Today, we are talking about groundwater. When it doesn't rain or when water doesn't flow from reservoirs, the only place to find water is underground. But the problem is, groundwater is rapidly depleting. Overpumping sunk half of the San Joaquin Valley decades ago. Today, some parts of the Central Valley are sinking a foot a year. Reserves are shrinking by 800 billion gallons a year, according to the UC Center for Hydrologic Modeling. Phil Eisenberg of the Public Policy Institute of California and former assemblyman told the San Jose Mercury News, quote, "It's our savings account and we're draining it. At some point, there will be none left," end quote. Also, according to the San Jose Merc, the problem here is that deep wells, the size of the Empire State Building, are extracting so many gallons of water, the ground is collapsing. This is devastating for farmers and the 30 million Californians who rely on groundwater for some of their drinking water. We've done shows on this in the past. Some cities are completely out of water, and we'll be talking about that on today's show. In September, Governor Jerry Brown signed legislation to regulate groundwater for the very first time in the state's history. The legislation calls for local agencies to create plans to pump groundwater in a more sustainable way. The new law requires different groups and interests to work together to figure out how to preserve what's left. They include water agencies, agriculture, rural residents, and tribal governments. So today we're talking about the groundwater rules, who has a voice, and who doesn't. We're joined by Kristen Dobbin, Regional Water Management Coordinator with the Community Water Center. That's a water rights and advocacy organization in the San Joaquin Valley. The center was part of a coalition of environmental groups that pushed for the state's first ever groundwater laws, and they are fighting to ensure that rural residents are included in this process. Hi, Kristen. Welcome to the show.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
It's great to have you. We're also joined by Leif Hillman, Director of Natural Resources and Environmental Policy for the Karuk Tribe. The tribe's 3,800 members live along a 70-mile stretch of the Klamath River. The tribe is developing cleanup legislation to ensure tribal communities are also represented and have a seat at the table. Hi, Leif. Welcome to the show.
Good morning. Thank you.
Good morning. And we're joined by David Gutierrez, Program Manager for the Groundwater Sustainability Program within the Department of Water Resources. David is also Chief of Division of Safety of Dams under the same agency. Hi, David. Welcome to the show.
Good morning, and thank you for having me.
Well, it's great to have you. So, David, let's start off with you. We've done a bunch of shows on groundwater. We know these laws. This new law is massive and groundbreaking. And it's going to take a while to get the law to, you know, figure out how this is going to be implemented. This is still in the process. But where are we right now in that process?
So we're just beginning, I would say, in the process. So the law is established, as you mentioned, back in September, so that's not very long. I think you have to develop a program to institute the law, and I think that's what we're doing right now. So we're right in the beginning. Even though we're in the beginning, the Department of Water Resources had some responsibilities right up front to do. And so some of the things I think that we're working on right now is the department's developing, and we could talk about this later in the show, regulations for both basin boundary changes as well as groundwater sustainability plans. And those are two key components of the legislation that are up front. And at the same time this is happening, although not within the responsibility or the authority of the state, the locals are developing groundwater sustainability agencies. So they're just beginning to do that and talk amongst themselves and organize themselves to prepare for implementation of the law.
And this is a massive undertaking in such a huge state of California. So various interests have to get together, water agencies have to get together. Is that why the law, or is that why the regions don't have to come up with a sustainability plan until 2020?
Yeah, I think you have to realize that this is a long-term solution to a long-term problem. So when we think about the drought and what's going on with the drought right now, although the drought highlighted the issues associated with groundwater, this has been a problem for actually decades. And so it's taken us decades to get into this situation. We're not going to be able to kind of turn it around overnight. So think of this program and the solutions to this program over the long term. It's going to take several years to get the program up and running, and then it's going to take several years to begin managing from a sustainable level. And I think that's the way we want to think about it.
And David, we've done so many shows about the drought from so many different angles. And it's kind of shocking when you learn that the state of California has not really kept tabs on how much groundwater is being used. Why has it taken so long to put something like this into place?
Well, that's kind of a complex answer and probably a complex question that probably deserves a complex answer. But there's obviously a lot of political pressures and things pulling in different directions on how we should deal with issues such as groundwater. And I think it was the drought, though, that really instituted the fact that we really need to do something. We are tracking where groundwater is going. I think we have a fairly decent idea, but we can certainly do a better job. And I think that's what this legislation is all about, to begin tracking what's happening, and then more importantly, to start turning that around to solve some of the problems associated with the depletion of groundwater.
That is David Gutierrez. He's Program Manager for the Groundwater Sustainability Program within the California Department of Water Resources. And Kristen Dobbin is with the Community Water Center. The center was part of a coalition of environmental groups that pushed for the state's first ever groundwater rules. Kristen, what's your overall assessment of these rules? What do you think is most important in terms of what we need to know about?
I think it's important to note that groundwater depletion has been a problem for a really long time, and it wasn't until the drought started compounding these effects that we reached a point that the state as a whole realized we can't continue with business as usual. But what we need to remember is there's three important parts. The first part is that we have to form these local agencies that will then implement the following parts. And the second part would be to develop a plan for sustainable management and then to implement that plan so we reach sustainability by 2040 in the Central Valley.
And so talk a little bit about the process involved in first putting the law together. Do you feel like the coalition of environmental groups and community members had a seat at the table?
There was a broad coalition of organizations, individuals, and interest groups that really worked hard to craft this legislation to be as effective as it can be in solving our problems. Because what we know is that groundwater depletion affects many of the disadvantaged communities, many of the rural communities, and our Native American tribes most profoundly. And so those interests really need to be at a seat at the table in creating the solution that's going to address these concerns. And so I think there was a lot of success, a lot of collaboration from a lot of different parties to get us where we are now. And now we are again kind of the iterative process of defending this law in Sacramento this summer.
What do you mean defending it?
There's a lot of different legislative proposals right now to, in some cases, weaken, in some cases, change the law. And so for us, the Community Water Center and many of our partners, we're really committed to making sure that this law, which we passed last year, remains a strong and effective tool for solving these problems long term.
Who's doing that? Are they trying to dilute the law? Can you tell us, are there groups? Are they politicians?
I'd say the actors are as varied as the approaches. So there are politicians, there's different interest groups involved. But what it comes down to is that this is groundbreaking for California. Never before has groundwater extraction been regulated, and not everyone sees eye to eye on how or that process should happen. And so there's a lot of different approaches and a lot of different proposals, but what we need to keep our eye on the goal, which is sustainable groundwater that can maintain kind of and meet our needs. And so that involves making sure that groundwater levels stay stable enough to meet drinking water needs for rural communities who are most at risk of losing their drinking supply to dropping groundwater levels.
And Kristen Dobbin is with the Community Water Center, part of a coalition of environmental groups that pushed for these groundwater rules. Leif Hillman is director of natural resources for the Karuk tribe. The tribe's 3,800 members live along a 70-mile stretch of the Klamath River. And the Karuk tribe is developing legislation to ensure tribal communities are represented in this law. What does it mean to represent tribal communities in a law like this, Leif?
Well, actually, I would
just wanted to clarify that we're working to with other partners, both tribal and non-tribal, to ensure that cleanup language to this law is not only protecting the law that got passed, but improving on it and its effectiveness.
Okay, and so talk a little bit about that work. Do you feel like the groups you work with had a seat at the table when the law was being written?
Well, we certainly tried very hard to participate in those processes, in the process of developing the language in the law, and we're committed to working just as hard to not only defend that that law, but to improve the implementation of it.
And so what are your thoughts on what Kristen just told us about different interests trying to dilute the law? What are you seeing?
Well, that's absolutely going to be the case, and this is a groundbreaking law, and as mentioned earlier, this is not a short-term fix. This is a long-term fix that, you know, that comes along sort of at the foundation of it is recognizing that cooperative management of groundwater is critical to the effectiveness of any groundwater sustainability plan. And so we are committed to that goal of cooperative management.
And David, what is that process going to look like in Sacramento? Leaf and Kristen are saying that different interests are coming to the table to try to dilute the law. So how is that process going to work, and what's the next step there?
Well, we have the current law to work with, and the Department of Water Resources has its roles and responsibilities outlined in the current law. And we're marching forward with the current law. I think you can never anticipate what's going to actually get passed in legislation until it actually gets passed. So we're moving ahead. We're implementing the law as is, and we think that what we have in the law right now works well. And I think, as mentioned earlier, too, it's all about coordination and collaboration amongst the locals to make this work.
So is the governor prepared to go up against the special interests that are going to fight this, the implementation of this law?
I think the governor would certainly work with any and all who want to modify the law, and I think he'll make the appropriate changes if there were any that are necessary. However, I think he also understands the importance of this particular legislation and the importance to the health of California, to its to the groundwater and its economy in the future.
At the end of the day, is it possible, David, for you to say with confidence that by 2020 we will finally be able to measure how much groundwater is being taken?
Well, I think you need to think of this, and not only this question, but the entire law, as kind of a regional and local issue. And so what I mean by that is I think there will be areas that we will have a very good understanding of how much water is being taken and how much volume of water we have left in certain parts of the state. And then there's going to be other areas that may not be able to make it over the bar just yet. And I think those are the areas that will maybe take a little bit longer than 2020 to be able to know exactly where we are in terms of the water conditions in the particular area and whether we're not going to get to groundwater sustainability in the short term or even in a longer term. So it's definitely a regional and local issue, and I think the answers are going to come out kind of regionally and locally as well.
David Gutierrez is Program Manager for the Groundwater Sustainability Program within the California Department of Water Resources. Leif Hillman is Director of Natural Resources and Environmental Policy for the Karuk Tribe. There are 3,800 members live along a 70-mile stretch of the Klamath River, and the tribe is developing cleanup legislation to ensure tribal and non-tribal communities are represented in this law. Kristen Dobbin is Regional Water Management Coordinator with the Community Water Center. The center was part of a coalition of groups that pushed for these rules. And today, we continue our week-long series on California's water crisis by talking about groundwater and the new groundwater rules. And if you would like to join us, if you have any questions for this massive law, we'd love to hear from you. If you live in the Central Valley, what are your thoughts on this law, and what are you seeing? It's really hard for some of us who live in cities to imagine the ground sinking. I was just watching a video this morning of what it looked like for a well the size of the Empire State Building to go underground and dig so much water. And as a result, the ground is really starting to collapse. You can give us a call at 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. Kristen, talk a little bit about what we're really facing here, because it is kind of hard to wrap your arms around this when you read that reserves are shrinking by 800 billion gallons a year. And until I watched this video, it was kind of hard to visualize a well the size of the Empire State Building extracting so many gallons of water, which is causing the ground to collapse.
Yeah, do you know what? I don't think anyone would have guessed maybe 5, 10, 15 years ago that we were going to be drilling 2,000-foot deep wells. That's not something that anyone, I think, would have anticipated. But that's where we are right now. Groundwater levels are dropping drastically, and the effects are catastrophic for communities that rely on shallow wells. And often an individual family or a small community doesn't have the resources to drill the type of wells that are now being required to reach reliable water supplies that far down in the ground.
And is it safe to assume that it's corporate farmers that are doing this deep drilling? Because we have made distinctions this week between corporate farmers and small farmers. And in the media, you always hear ag, but you know, what does that mean exactly? I mean, I'm guessing it's very expensive to do this kind of drilling.
I think that's a fair distinction. Drilling a 2,000-foot well could cost $1 million.
Wow.
So I think it's fair to say that those aren't small farms that are necessarily investing in that. But what we need to think about is groundwater is a shared resource. And so when we're getting to the point that only such large actors can reach it, that's a huge cause for concern. And that's what we need to be working towards with this new law.
David, right now, does the state keep track of this? I mean, do we know which corporate farmers are drilling 2,000-foot deep wells the size of the Empire State Building?
Digging wells and drilling wells is generally a local responsibility to track and approve those types of things. I think in the future, though, what you're going to see is through these groundwater sustainability agencies, we're going to have much better grasp. So I think the law gives quite expanded authorities to the local agencies to not only be able to approve those types of things, but also be able to track how much water is being taken and at what level. So I think the future is what we need to focus on, and the ability to be able to do a better job in tracking those sorts of things.
Well, and winter officially ended a couple of weeks ago. Unfortunately, I'm guessing it's probably not going to rain in the next couple of months. So as it stands right now, are farmers, corporate farmers, using these deep wells to get their water?
Well, I think you know, we all need water, and many of the farmers and others that depend on water, we have to continue to progress. And I think what we need to do is to address these issues kind of over a long term. And over the shorter term, we'll see kind of what kind of actions are going to be taken. But I think this particular law is trying to deal with these kind of issues over a longer term. And I think that needs to be kind of understood.
And Leif, what would you add to that? I mean, when we talk about what we're actually facing here.
Well, it's absolutely correct to say that this is a long-term problem that's been with us for a very long time. It's only now the effects of unregulated groundwater pumping are becoming are coming to the forefront, and people are acknowledging that this is a long-term problem. That wasn't created overnight, and it's not going to be solved certainly overnight. It's going to require a long-term commitment on the part of a lot of stakeholders, you know, folks who have an interest in this. And, you know, we have today communities who don't have water because of this, how dire the situation has become. And it's unfortunate that it took so long, but I am happy that California has finally realized that this is a situation that has to be confronted and dealt with.
Let's talk about some of those communities that don't have water. A couple months back, we did a show and heard from some people in Porterville, California, which is outside of Los Angeles. And this city, people don't have water at all. I mean, they're relying on bottled water to get their water. Can you talk a little bit about Leaf talk about some of the communities that have no choice but to live without water from the tap?
Well, I think folks from the southern part of the state might be better equipped to talk about that issue. Our issue here in the north, particularly with the tribal interests, revolve around protection of tribal trust resources, including salmon and other resident species that are being affected by the dewatering of streams.
Can you elaborate on that?
Well, I mean, many California Indian tribes have tribal trust resources that they have rights to, and as well as water rights that are associated with those rights to harvest fish. And groundwater management in basins upstream or downstream from tribal lands in all likelihood have an extreme effect on the spawning and rearing habitat of those migrating fish. So in order to protect these trust resources, tribes have to have an opportunity to participate in groundwater management and the decisions that go along with those development of groundwater management plans. So that's our primary interest in this and representing interest of Indian tribes. But there are certainly tribal communities in the southern part of the state that are affected directly in the sense of their communities don't have water, but I'm probably not the best person to speak on those specific instances.
All right. Do you want to talk about that for a minute before we go to break, Kristen? NPR just had a piece about the rural community of Fairmead, California. It's about an hour north of Fresno on Highway 99. And a lot of people living in this community, mostly African-American community, do not have tap water.
Sure. I'm personally not familiar with Fairmead, and the sad reality is there's too many of those communities in Central Valley. We work with many communities that for a long time we've had a drinking water crisis where communities did not have access to safe drinking water, and that affects more than 1 million Californians. And then as the drought has worn on, we're now in our fourth year of drought, we're seeing communities that have no water at all. And so as I'm sure the case is in Fairmead, we have here in Tulare County communities like Munson, communities like East Porterville, where wells are going dry almost daily. And the situation is, it's scary. Water is a human right in California. And what we're seeing is people relying on bottled water for drinking water, and they're trucking buckets of water for bathing, for their toilets, for kind of the basic sanitary needs that households have.
And that is Kristen Dobbin, Regional Water Management Coordinator with the Community Water Center. It's a water rights organization in the San Joaquin Valley. Leif Hillman is Director of Natural Resources and Environmental Policy for the Karuk Tribe. Their 3,800 members live along a 70-mile stretch of the Klamath River, and they are working with the state of California and other interests to develop cleanup legislation. David Gutierrez is program manager for the Groundwater Sustainability Program within the California Department of Water Resources. Today, we are continuing our week-long series on California's water crisis by focusing on groundwater. Now, when it doesn't rain, the only place to find water is underground. The problem is some of these massive farms are these deep wells are basically the size of the Empire State Building, just to give you a visual, 2,000 feet deep. They're extracting so many gallons of water that the ground is starting to collapse. And so we're talking about this new legislation, and we'll be back after this.
This is Your Call on Local Public Radio. We invite you to join in today's conversation. The toll-free number is 866-798-8255, 866-798-TALK. By the way, our May fundraising campaign will begin on next Tuesday, the 12th. It's all about growing radio that is independent, creative, and proudly non-commercial. Listener support is what makes Your Call happen, and it helps to make local public radio as strong as it is. Help us start the drive, get a little leg up, so to speak, a little head start, by making your donation today at KALW.org. Again, our toll-free number to join the conversation is 866-798-8255, and the email address is feedback@yourcallradio.org.
Thank you. This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, it's our media roundtable. We'll be discussing media coverage of California's drought. We will talk about how the media are reporting on the water crisis and water policies. We'll also talk about the historic drought in Brazil. We'll be joined by journalist Matt Weiser, San Jose Mercury News' Lisa Krieger, and Mauricio Savarese. And if you have a show idea or a guest idea, you can drop us a line, feedback@yourcallradio.org. Today, we are talking about groundwater and the new groundwater rules with David Gutierrez, Program Manager for the Groundwater Sustainability Program within the Department of Water Resources, Leif Hillman, Director of Natural Resources and Environmental Policy for the Karuk Tribe. They live along a 70-mile stretch of the Klamath River, and Kristen Dobbin, Regional Water Management Coordinator with the Community Water Center. We're getting a bunch of phone calls about the Empire State Building, and I got this comparison from the San Jose Mercury News. Lisa Krieger wrote this amazing piece. She's actually going to be on the show tomorrow, called San Joaquin Valley Sinking as Farmers Race to Tap Aquifer. And she reports that these deep wells that are being used are the size of the Empire State Building, about 2,000 feet. And they're extracting so many gallons of water that the ground is starting to collapse. We'll put a link on our website and you can watch the video that she recently came up with to show that comparison. And before we take calls, David, I just wanted to ask you a question about these communities that are running out of water. In the NPR piece, they quoted Jean Wilson, who lives in Fairmead, and she doesn't have water. And she says she's so fed up. She wrote to the governor. When we had on residents from Porterville, they felt like state officials, city officials just weren't really doing anything about the fact that they don't have tap water. Is this a priority in Sacramento?
Well, I think everything you're talking about today recognizes the fact that our water resource system currently is not sustainable. And I think that's why we have the actions that we're actually taking to deal with it. I think you've seen maybe last year the governor's water action plan was released last year, where he's got a 10-point program to deal with water resources in general. And I think we have to, as a state of California, deal with it now. The legislation that we're talking about in groundwater deals with groundwater, but we have to deal with water resources as a whole. And I think the governor and the state of California is taking those actions so that we don't get into these kind of situations into the future. And I think it's everyone recognizes that this is just not sustainable.
Right, because, I mean, in a state with so much wealth, I think we're still, the eighth largest economy in the world, that citizens are living without running water. I mean, that's shocking.
And I think that's something we obviously need to correct, and I think that's what we're doing now by putting and implementing these types of programs together.
Well, we've got a number of callers on the line, so let's hear from Maria in Hayward. Hi, Maria. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for your excellent, excellent programming all the time. I so much appreciate it.
Thank you.
My question was about your other program. You're speaking about the oil companies owning a lot of these large farms and also the bottling companies using the aquifers that still have viable water. The water is still pure, but they're using them for dump sites and polluting that way as well.
And so you wanted to know also if the oil companies are at the table.
Farms, how big a player are they, along with the bottling companies, that we don't hear about?
Right. Well, thank you for that. So, David, yesterday we did a show about bottled water and the fact that so much of the bottled water people drink, 50 billion bottles are sold in the U.S. every year. That water comes from California. So, first off, are oil companies involved in this process? Do they have a seat at the table?
I'm not sure. Your question was bottled water or oil?
Well, we're going to do oil first. I just wanted to tell you about our bottled water show yesterday.
Okay. So the question is whether the oil companies are at the table with the sustainable groundwater program. And I think those are kind of two different issues that probably need to stay separated. Oil and production of oil is one issue, and water and production of water, I think, is a separate issue. So the oil companies are not necessarily working with us on the sustainable groundwater program. That's a kind of a water quality issue, and it's separate from this particular program.
And then what about the bottled water companies? Do they have a seat at the table?
Well, I think you should, when we single out any one particular company, say the water bottle company, we could extend that from water bottle company to soda companies to canning companies, etc. We need water in a variety of ways. We need to drink water, and all those all those companies that use water, they're generally regulated in one way or another. They generally use a limited amount of water compared to the numbers of and the amounts of water that we're actually talking about that we need to deal with. So I think we should always kind of keep an eye on that and keep an eye on what we're talking about. We need water. We need drinking water. We need to continue drinking water. And so that's just one of many issues that we should probably bundle together and make sure that we understand the level of those impacts.
Well, I mean, what came up yesterday is a lot of listeners were concerned about the fact that the water that should be free and available to people is being bottled and sold in some cases for $3 a bottle, and then 60% of those 50 billion bottles are ending up in the landfills and the oceans.
So I would say that that's certainly an issue, not necessarily a water supply issue, but that's certainly an environmental issue. So what we're concerned about here is more the volume of water and how we're using the volume of water. Obviously, we need to conserve and we need to be careful about the areas that, of conservation, but we also need to understand that, you know, as the citizens of California, we need water to survive. We need to recognize that, and we need to be smart about where we use that particular water, and I think that's what we need to address right away.
Maria, thank you for calling in. Let's go next to Azab in San Francisco. Hi, Azab. Welcome to the show. Hello?
Yes.
Hi, go ahead. You're on the air. Oh, I think Azab has a bad line. So Azab says that he is from central Iran where they grow pistachios. He says they use salty water, not fresh water. He wants to know why farmers are using fresh water in California. David, do you want to take that one?
Well, I'm not sure. There's levels of salt that you have to kind of be concerned about. So, in fact, when we look at our coastal areas, we have what's called saltwater intrusion. And there's levels of what I mean by that is as we take groundwater out of the ground, and if we take too much, the seawater starts to intrude on into the land. And there becomes points where too much salt will not work for production of different farms. And so it's the level of salt that I think you have to be concerned about. You can't just pump salt water from the ocean and expect your crops to grow, though.
We have an email from Larry who says, how much water does fracking use? And Reuters just had a piece a couple weeks ago. The lead says, or the headline is, fracking in California used 70 million gallons of water in 2014. David, we had a state official on late last year who said that the fracking companies are using fresh water. Has that changed at all, considering that we're in this horrible drought now?
I wouldn't know whether the fracking or the oil companies continue to frack with fresh water or not.
And
I won't be able to answer that.
What are your thoughts on these huge numbers? I mean, you know, this is getting so much attention that fracking in California used 70 million gallons of water last year.
I think this all kind of goes back to maybe some of those previous questions. We certainly need to conserve. We need to understand where we use the water. But we have to kind of think about this collectively. I think we shouldn't probably single out any particular industries. We need to consider all industries. And then we need to be smart about what industries that we can do without and what industries we can force some additional conservation on. And I think that's probably the way to address these kind of questions.
Well, speaking of industries, we did a show about agriculture on Monday. And, I mean, as you know, Governor Brown has been criticized for not directly talking about agriculture and the mandatory restrictions. So what are your thoughts on that? I mean, with these new groundwater rules, are there going to be limits for corporate farmers?
So in the future, again, this is definitely a regional or local question. So once we establish our groundwater sustainability plans and folks begin to manage water sustainably, well, then it's going to kind of depend on what area and particular area you come from. But it's a simple equation, and the simple equation is you have supply and you have demand, and you have to have those to be equal. And you either are going to need to increase your supply or reduce your demand for that equation to be balanced. And so there will be some areas where we're going to have to reduce demand in some situations. In other areas, we're going to need to grow supply. And I think that's the balance, and that's what the trick is that we're going to need to figure out, I think, in the future as we implement this particular program.
Kristen, what are your thoughts on this? What role do you think agriculture is playing and will play in the future? One of our guests, his name is escaping me, but I'll find it in a minute, on our ag show said that ag is really getting a free pass here. And, you know, ag is one of the biggest users of water in the state, 80%. And do you think that by 2020 there will be real restrictions on how much water ag can use?
Well, none of us can guess how this law is going to play out. Kind of as David noted, this is a law that's based on local groundwater basins, of which we have 515 in the state. And so this process is really dependent on the local actors and how each local basin wants to deal with it. But it is. It's a matter of balancing supply and demand. And in the Central Valley, where we work, this is going to mean reducing demand. There's no way that the use that we have right now of groundwater can continue. It's just not sustainable, and we're seeing the effects of that every day. And so I think we can't say what role ag is going to play, because first step is to form these agencies, and they're an important groundwater user. They're a big groundwater user, and they're going to be involved in these agencies. And so figuring out how we balance that important stakeholder with other stakeholders so that everyone can come together, because groundwater is a shared resource. And so if we're not doing this collaboratively with all of the different stakeholders, it's not going to work.
Leif, do you have anything to add on that?
That's absolutely correct. I think I mentioned earlier that the simple fact that people are recognizing that cooperative management of groundwater is critical, absolutely critical to the effectiveness of any sort of groundwater sustainability plan. And without the participation of all of the stakeholders, then it's difficult to see how the law can be successfully implemented.
Leif Hellman is Director of Natural Resources and Environmental Policy for the Karuk Tribe. The tribe's 3,800 members live along a 70-mile stretch of the Klamath River. David Gutierrez is Program Manager for the Groundwater Sustainability Program within the California Department of Water Resources. And Kristen Dobbin is Regional Water Management Coordinator with the Community Water Center, a water rights group based in the San Joaquin Valley. Today on Your Call, we continue our week-long series about California's water crisis. You can find our past shows at yourcallradio.org. Today we are talking about groundwater. Groundwater is rapidly depleting. Some parts of the Central Valley are sinking a foot a year. And if you have any questions about groundwater or comments, if you live in the Central Valley, we'd love to hear from you. What do you think of the new law? 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. Let's go next to Al in San Francisco. Hi, Al. Welcome to the show.
Yeah, hi. How are you? I think, you asked the question earlier about Porterville and about bottled water. The answer is the same in both counts. It's just greed. Contractors and developers, in collusion with city planners and city governments, have for the last 75 years developed the West Coast and Southern California agricultural and desert land into subdivisions as fast as they could figure out a way to sell it to people from the East Coast who are tired of digging out in the winter. They've run out of land in California, so now they're subdividing the deserts in Arizona, New Mexico, and Colorado. Arizona, New Mexico, and Colorado have first right to the water of the Colorado River, which is why the Southern California now is screaming bloody murder, because they don't have any water supply coming up. You see it here in Northern California with places like the land behind Marin Civic Center, which is a floodplain. But in the 1960s, it was developed into a subdivision. The unfortunate thing is every time you have a high tide and a storm, it floods. A couple of years ago, it was under 4 feet of water, and everybody who lived there said, "Whoa, what is that?" And everybody who lived there for any length of time said, "Oh, that always happens." And it continues to happen. It's happening right now. It's the reason why we have global warming, because they've built subdivisions surrounding city centers where nobody lives, where you need a car to drive to. And that's the state we're in. They're still doing it.
Well, Alf, thank you for calling. We have a bunch of callers on the line, so I'll get a few more, and then I'll get guests to respond. David, are you able to hear our callers?
I'm afraid you're going to have to repeat any. I don't hear the callers.
All right. Al was just talking about how the reason why we got here has a lot to do with the greed of developers and contractors. But we're going to go to a few more calls, and then I'll have you all respond. Let's go next to Lisa in San Francisco. Hi, Lisa.
Yes, thank you, Rose, for having this program. It's really, really very important. Unfortunately, I haven't had the opportunity to read the actual law, but from what I can hear from your guests, there's a lot of emphasis on the local, which is good in terms for one on one part. But on the other part, when you look at the actual nature of aquifers, they aren't local. They don't respect boundaries, national or state boundaries, for that matter. So the solution has to be more broad. It's not just local, but has to be on a broad basis. Also, I'd like to point out that at San Francisco, we are still using beautiful, pristine water from Hetch Hetchy for our toilets. So we need to really make some changes. And the recent, I was doing rainwater harvesting studies in environmental sciences at the Eco Center, and I was looking at all the code, the plumbing codes and everything like that, and it seems like they're inflicting a lot of regulation in terms of what kind of like filters to be used for toilet water, in other words, for water to either gray water or rainwater, and they're putting rainwater and gray water in the same category. But I mean, it's a toilet, for God's sakes. We don't need to use pristine, clean water for toilets. So we need to start making some changes in here in San Francisco as well.
All right. Thank you for calling in, Lisa. So, David, Lisa says there's so much emphasis on local agencies, but she believes that because aquifers are not local, the solutions need to be more broad.
Actually, that's a really good question, so let me try to explain that one. So a key principle of the particular law that we're talking about is that groundwater is best managed at the local or regional level. And so what we mean by that is these groundwater sustainability agencies that will be developed, they're going to be managing particular basins that are identified by the state. But it's exactly correct. So when you think of the Central Valley, as the caller had suggested, in some situations, the basins that are defined do not know that the water can't go from one basin to another, so that you do have to have a collective management system statewide, especially when the particular basins are adjoined to each other like they are in the Central Valley. So I think of it this way. If you think of the state, and the state's going to be developing statewide plans to get us to a statewide sustainability. But on the same token, there are regional effects. So the effects that are on the coast with saltwater intrusion are different than the subsidence issues that we're dealing in the Central Valley and are different than the water supply issues in the northern parts of the state. So it makes sense to manage us on a local level, but the state of California and the Department of Water Resources, it's our responsibility and role to make sure that there's statewide sustainability and consistency, and that's kind of what we're trying to do by develop laws that will be a consistent approach to applying this particular implementation of the program.
Well, thank you for calling, Lisa. And Vince has a related question. He writes, does the sinking permanently destroy the aquifer? And if so, would that not require quicker real action than the proposed 2020 action? David?
Okay, and so subsidence is definitely a big issue, and in some situations it does destroy the aquifer in the sense that once the soils collapse, you're not going to get that back. Now, part of our program is to try to develop a recharge into some of the basins, but I think the caller is absolutely correct in understanding the fact that once subsidence occurs, you do have a problem that you're not going to be able to rebound from. So the problem is urgent in certain parts of the state where you do have subsidence. And I think the law also recognizes that and requires those areas that are in critical conditions of overdraft and have significant issues like subsidence, they're going to be required to have a plan quicker than those that do not. But it's still going to take a few years for us to kind of get that up and running. So by 2020, those areas are required to have a groundwater sustainability plan.
And Kristen, how are Central Valley aquifers replenished? Is it runoff from the Sierras?
That's one mechanism that it happens. There's also groundwater recharge, that where surface water or other sources are used to replenish aquifers. And your caller was definitely correct when she said that groundwater does not follow our political boundaries and a lot of the boundaries that we've set up for water management. And so one of the big challenges is to start working with actors that we're not used to working with. Here in the Central Valley, in Fresno County, for example, there's 5 groundwater basins. And so this starts making people work with different agencies, different actors, and it's a challenge. And figuring out how we're going to move forward with that is a question. But recharge is critical, and it will be especially important in the Central Valley, and that'll all be part of how we figure out the solution collectively.
Well, and because this is a crisis, it seems like there's now a race to get what's left underground, because the San Jose Mercury News, Lisa Krieger, we're going to have her on tomorrow's show, the paper did an analysis and found that in the first month and a half of this year, Fresno County issued 124 new well permits. In Kern County, Cotton King, J.C. Boswell Farms drilled 5 ultra-deep 2,500-foot wells last year. Again, these are the size of 2 Empire State buildings. A Chowchilla Farm in Madera County has ordered 25 new wells. I mean, the list just goes on. There's just new wells being, there's new permits given out, and new wells are have been approved on a regular basis here.
That's certainly true. In Tulare County, the number of well permits issued this year is already past, if or very close to, the number for all of last year combined. It certainly is a race to drill wells and a race to the bottom in certain cases, and it's concerning. We need to be reining in kind of our use, and this law is such an important part of that, but it is a long-term solution. And so in the shorter term, we do need to think about how counties can start reining in well permitting themselves, because that right now is an authority that, I mean, lies with the counties. And so there are a couple other mechanisms that can be considered right now in the short term.
Are any counties reining this in?
There are some counties that are doing so. There's a couple counties that have passed emergency groundwater ordinances that either stop or limit the drilling of new wells. And so there's some models to work off of, but it's also, it requires often a lot of staff that counties may or may not have, and there's some barriers in terms of property rights and other concerns. But there are counties that are making progress, and other counties that haven't done so should probably be looking towards how they can be reforming their well ordinances in the short term, because this new Groundwater Sustainability Act is, you know, we're 2.5 years away from creating the sustainability agencies, and we're 5 years away from creating plans, and then another 20 years away from actually achieving sustainability through the law.
Well, we have time for one more caller. Let's hear from Ernesto in Porterville, where 500 wells have gone dry and residents are relying on bottled water for drinking, and portable showers have been set up at local churches. Hi, Ernesto. Thank you for calling in.
Yes, good morning. My name is Erasto Terán. I'm from Port Royal, and the situation is real. The situation is the wells get dry probably every day, but let's make a note about this. The wells, they don't have any control. In 1949, we don't have a public record. The county, they never released how many wells they've been in process. As a matter of fact, Tulare County has been broken the record of building wells, but we don't have a record who and where. The real situation is that Portoville is facing a real, real, real situation, not only this year, but last year. Like you say, people are showering and outside. And one of the bad things about it is last week, the city of Portoville, the city council, voted against water to this Portoville, so that's not the neighborhood relationship. But right now they try to reverse that. They probably they will have to have a meeting and reverse the vote, because the question of the city council and the city of Port Orleans is so big right now. Is why I decided to speak to you and to the radio and the community that they can hear the real situation in this photo view.
Well, thank you for calling in, Ernesto. David, that is Ernesto. He lives near Porterville, where residents are relying on bottled water for drinking. They're using portable showers set up at a local church. And on Tuesday, the city council discussed the possibility of declaring a state of emergency. At this point, I mean, what can the state do for people who don't have water?
Again, I think what we're talking about is two different things. Today we're talking about the Sustainable Groundwater Management Program, which is longer term, and I think we have to recognize that. But for the immediate terms, we do have to take some steps. I think we have to recognize and be able to forecast, and we can. We can forecast the future of what's going to happen with the situation that we're having in particular parts of the state. And I think we've got the state trying to do that with some of its drought program as well.
And sorry to cut you off. We're almost out of time. The last time we spoke with people in Porterville, I mean, they're taking donations from people around the world to buy bottled water. Is it the state's responsibility to set up a fund so these people have access to clean water?
Well, I think it's the state's responsibility to look after its citizens, and I think what we're going to try to do is do just that and try to solve these problems so that they don't continue to reoccur. We've got a lot of folks and a lot of population in the state of California, and we all rely on water. We have to be smart about the use of that water.
David Gutierrez is program manager for the Groundwater Sustainability Program with the California Department of Water Resources. Kristen Dobbin is with the Community Water Center in the San Joaquin Valley. And Leif Hillman is a member of the Karuk tribe. They live along a 70-mile stretch of the Klamath River. Thank you all for joining us. And thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's your call. On the next Your Call, it's our Friday Media Roundtable. This week, we'll discuss coverage of California's drought. Governor Brown's mandatory water conservation plans have attracted national attention. How are the media reporting on California's water crisis and water policies? We'll also talk about the historic drought in Brazil. We'll be joined by journalists Matt Weiser and Mauricio Savarese. Join the conversation on the next Your Call with me, Rose Aguilar, and you. Support for Your Call comes from the listeners of KALW. To listen to past shows or sign up for our podcast, visit yourcallradio.org. Nock Nguyen produces the show, Malihe Razazan is senior producer, and Matt Martin is executive producer. Phil Hartman is our chief engineer, and Joe Burke is our studio engineer. Our theme music was composed and performed by Live Human. Special thanks to our partners at KUSP in Santa Cruz. You can email us at feedback@yourcallradio.org.